This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right, it is 5:05 in the evening, and our first story has to do with the Pakatan Harapan government and another one of their promises. Now, we've been talking a lot about their manifesto, what they have and have not accomplished. Yesterday, a lot of you had a lot of thoughts on whether they are liars or not.
Oh,
a lot of strong messages.
Or whether or not, you know, it's about being nimble and adjusting.
Correct.
So there are two perspectives here.
So as you've heard on the news, the Communications and Multimedia Minister Gobind Singh Deo said that the Cabinet has agreed to temporarily suspend actions under the Sedition Act pending its repeal. This is big news. We've been talking about having a moratorium for a long time. He reiterated that the government is still on track to repeal the act and that the AG is working on it.
These are exciting times.
Right?
Yes. Of all the acts, I think the Sedition Act is one that comes up in the news time and time again.
The Sedition Act is also something that Ezra and I have been threatened with many, many times.
So there you go. Personal experience.
We would like to see it go.
And I think it's one of those acts that's incredibly old. If nothing else, it just is from a different time and space. And if we
Thank you, England.
Yes, precisely. Thank you for that and so many other delightful acts that you left behind. For me personally, I'm looking forward to seeing this talked about during the parliamentary sitting that's coming up.
Next week?
Next week. We will be doing daily coverage, actually, on our show of the sitting and the conversations that happened during it. Last round was quite colourful. I think this round will be much the same.
Well, so, it's going to be a very exciting session because you've got the Sedition Act, you've got the moratoriums, you've got all of these other conversations, plus the added bonus of whatever happens on Saturday at the PD by-election. Anwar Ibrahim may be back in Parliament if he wins, and that in itself is going to be momentous, right?
Just a delightful little sprinkle over the entire sitting of excitement. I mean, I really think it's going to be an interesting one, and we'll be there for you every day, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, today we're focusing on the promise of fulfilling the MA63 agreement and rectifying the status of Sabah and Sarawak.
Dalam perjanjian yang kita panggil Malaysia Agreement ataupun MA63, keempat-empat wilayah ini bergabung sebagai equal partners. Tahun-tahun berikutnya telah juga menukar status Sabah dan Sarawak daripada rakan sekutu kepada negeri-negeri di dalam Malaysia. Malaysia Baru dan Kerajaan Pakatan Harapan mengambil maklum mengenai perkara ini dan akan mengembalikan status rakan sekutu kepada Sabah dan Sarawak.
Yeah, that was Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad speaking at the Malaysia Day celebration in Kota Kinabalu this year. Tun Mahathir is actually going to lead the Malaysia Agreement 1963 Special Cabinet Committee. And yesterday, de facto Law Minister Dato' Liew Vew Keong announced that this lineup is going to consist of 8 federal ministers.
So, including himself, there's also Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng, Economic Affairs Minister Dato' Sri Azmin Ali, Communications and Multimedia Minister Gobind Singh Deo, Foreign Minister Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah, Works Minister Barubian, International Trade and Industry Minister Darrell Liking, and Transport Minister Anthony Loh.
Yeah, so the other members are Sarawak Chief Minister, of course, Dato' Abang Johari Openg, Sabah Chief Minister Dato' Sri Muhammad Shafi Abdal, Attorney General Tommy Thomas, Chief Secretary of the Government Dato' Sri Ismail Bakar, and legal academics such as Prof. Emeritus Dato' Shad Salim Faruqi.
So we did explore the significance of the MA63 with Professor James Chin from the University of Tasmania in a show last year. Here he is giving some context to the agreement.
You have to remember, during the era that we're talking about, Southeast Asia was in the middle of the Cold War. Britain had every intention of setting up a single political entity in this part of the world that was to be pro-Western and basically pro-UK. So they wanted all the colonies to come together, and they saw Tunku Abdul Rahman as the best person to put it together. Tunku Abdul Rahman was a realist, a political realist, and he understood very, very early on that if he were just to merge with Singapore, that would not work because the non-Malay or the Chinese population would be too large. So he needed the Bumiputra population in Sabah and Sarawak in order to even out the increase in Chinese population coming in from Singapore. The Cobalt Commission was a thing that was agreed to by the governments of Malaya and the UK to set aside a group of people to come and engage the views of the local people of Sabah and Sarawak. From there, we have a thing called the IGC, the Intergovernment Commission, and that was essentially to put the results of the Cobalt Commission and to make sure that all the interests of Sabah and Sarawakis are taken into account and they will be included in the new Malaysian constitution that was based on the 1957 Malayan constitution. So where the problem lies is a lot of people in Sabah and Sarawak think, well, firstly, the process was rushed, and secondly, that the Cobalt Commission did not really represent the true wishes of the people in Sarawak. So that's basically where the controversy is.
You can download the whole podcast by searching the title Understanding MA63. Now, going back to what the law minister had to say, he told reporters that everything will be discussed, including the oil royalty and other developments. Oil royalties there, of course, being a reference to Sabah and Sarawak's request to increase that from the current 5%.
Which is nothing.
Yes, it is.
He also said that the committee does not want to go back on the historical aspect of the matter because some of the issues may be agreed upon without much dispute and would instead like to go to the core of the matter straight away, mainly the implementation of that said Malaysia agreement.
So the restorations, the plan is that the restorations should be completed in 6 months' time. Liu explained that the report will be tabled then and that, you know, the time frame might be shortened, but this 6 months is going to be used to look at the best way to implement MA63.
This is an incredibly important political maneuver on the part of the new Pakatan Harapan government. When they won, I think one of the biggest things or my takeaway was that for Dr. Mahathir, this is a complete rewrite of his final years, of what his legacy might be if he pulls this off and does this correctly. Remember, in Sabah, he is not the most popular person. That's why he didn't campaign in Sabah. Project IC, the shadow of Project IC still hangs over so much of Sabah politics. And if he manages to pull this off, he would not just cement, I guess, Sabah and Sarawak as crucial members of the coalition of Pakatan Harapan, which they need so desperately, but also completely transform his legacy. It's crazy.
And we're going to find that out in 6 months. It's
insanity.
Not...
Yes. Like, so fast, right?
Yes. 6 months is an incredibly short period of time, and I'm really looking forward to returning to the story and reporting on it again. On to our next story. The battle for the world's longest flight has now leveled up. You can fly direct from Singapore to New York.
Wouldn't you like to fly above and away? Wouldn't you like to fly up and away?
Yeah, so this is not a new flight. It's actually a relaunch. Singapore Airlines used to do this flight. They withdrew it because it became too expensive, but it covers more than 15,000 kilometers.
Insane.
It's scheduled to take just under 19 hours. And Qantas actually launched a 17-hour nonstop service from Perth to London earlier this year. And Qatar Airways runs a 17.5-hour service between Auckland and Doha.
So Singapore Airlines has said that there was demand for customers for nonstop services, which would help cut traveling times compared with flights which have a stopover. And while it might be the longest flight right now, 19 hours is actually nothing compared with some of its predecessors.
Yeah, so in 1936, Pan American Airways started the first passenger service between San Francisco and Manila via Honolulu, Midway, Wake Island and Guam. The first leg of that trip alone was originally more than 21 hours.
That would have been during the time when people would have been smoking on air.
On airplanes, yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Wow. I mean, that's just something to consider.
You say that's the time. There are still some Japanese airways that actually still have smoking sections on the plane.
That's true. But people also used to dress up to fly. So
that
I'm just
true.
Imagining being dressed up and smoking or sitting in a smoky cabin for 21 hours. It's just, you know, it's an interesting experience. Just 8 days after mail service began on that route a year earlier, the Times actually ran a headline exclaiming, "Clipper trimmed the schedule time, reached Manila from Alameda in 59 hours 47 minutes instead of 60 set.
So the ability of airlines to deliver fast direct trips was and still is constrained by fuel, right? So one analyst told The Times that when Singapore retired its previous Newark-Singapore flights, ultra-long-haul flights like this are essentially flying jet fuel tankers.
But the thinking behind the reintroduction of this route is that they're selling a premium product. It's for the top end of town. This is a route between two massive financial hubs. So they'll be filling this plane up with business people or well-heeled travelers who want the convenience of a non-stop flight.
Right. Now, I think this is quite interesting. So here's a clip detailing some of the configurations that have been made to the Airbus A350 to accommodate this world's longest commercial flight.
First of all, forget economy class. It's totally gone. The plane will carry a maximum of 161 passengers compared with 253 on the airline's existing A350s. The cabin will have 67 business seats in a one-to-one configuration, with 94 premium economy in a mostly 2-4-2 configuration at the rear. Now, while premium economy seats offer an 8-inch recline, the pitch will be a standard 38 inches. Also, to increase the shin space, the seat back pocket has been raised, giving you more space in the leg area. Now, in terms of the crew and pilots, the flight will be flown by 4 pilots, which is not unusual. They'll be given extra rest time of 8 hours whilst in flight, compared to 5 hours on a typical long-haul service. And when they land in New York, pilots will be given 3 days to rest before flying back to Singapore. Now, the 13 cabin crew will also be given 4 hours to rest during the flight and 2 days to enjoy New York before the return leg.
So we did check. Yeah. Prices for a round trip from Singapore to New York will cost you about 8 to 12,000 ringgit. So that's if you want to fly direct. I mean, including the 1 hour it would take us to get from KL to Singapore.
Mm, yeah. So here's the thing. In the past, and I'm not sure if this is going to be the case now, those flights didn't have economy class. Mm. So they had super economy, business and first, I believe. And that's why the initial starting price point was already much higher. An average flight, an average regular stopping flight from Singapore to New York right now is probably about, I think if you get it at a regular time, it's about 5K.
Yes, thereabouts. So my first thought was that I don't want to be on a plane for 19 hours nonstop. I just don't. I don't sleep well. I don't eat well on planes. I have no interest in that amount of uninterrupted time. I like having a transit. I might be alone there. I don't know.
I don't know what that's like. I've never been on a flight longer than 12 and a half hours or 13 hours. So
15 hours is my longest, and that was my outer limit of endurance.
5-6 movies? Yes.
Thereabouts. And no sleep. No,
no sleep.
Let us know what you think. I mean, do you want to fly for 19 hours nonstop? Or do you prefer your flight with a transit, something a bit more humane where you can brush your teeth and stretch your legs? That number to call is 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. The question is, do you want to fly for 19 hours nonstop?
After this, is your laksa safe to eat? We're going to be talking about laksa poisoning in just a little bit. Don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. This is the Evening Edition. Lynn and Uma with you. We're going through some of our favorite stories of the day.
We asked you earlier whether or not you would want to fly 19 hours nonstop. That's from Singapore to New York. Wei Zheng says, a 19-hour flight nonstop would be fun for me. I would play games and watch movies the whole time, but after that, I would collapse onto the hotel bed. That is a level of unprecedented optimism and a healthy back, I think.
I think so too. No, you know, I have to say a 19-hour flight, if you're cut off from the world as well, if you don't have Wi-Fi on the plane, it would be probably the only 19 hours you have of quiet time where you can watch movies and not get interrupted by text messages or anything else.
I once sat next to a man on a 12-hour flight who did not watch TV and did not sleep.
He just
stared straight forward and didn't speak and didn't eat. It was quite amazing. I thought he was a monk.
I'm very, very sorry. welcome back, right? So our next story is actually going to focus on the recent spate of laksa poisoning cases.
Following two deaths reported from food poisoning after consuming laksa in Kupang, Baling yesterday, the health ministry said it detected 42 new cases believed to be from the same source of food 14 of the cases were reported in Kedah, 7 in Perak.
So, okay, some of you might be on your way to an early dinner right now. Sorry about that. These new cases are linked, though, specifically to a Laksa eatery in Kupang, Kedah. So if you're in the Klang Valley, you should be okay. Having said that, the Health Ministry today said that there are now in total 61 cases of food poisoning reported from Selangor, Kedah and Perak.
Yeah, so Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah, Health Department Director General, said that 2 people have died, 21 patients have been warded, while another 38 patients have received outpatient treatment. Stool samples from 2 cases in Baling tested positive for salmonella.
The Health Ministry is still waiting for the test results that led to the food poisoning, but they are suspecting that it may be actually the noodles in the dish, and that this case was not linked to reports of local iceberg lettuces that were found with high levels of pesticide.
Is the plural of lettuce lettuces? I had no
idea. I went
idea.
For it.
You
I don't
went
know.
For it?
Yeah.
Such confidence, Lee Twilin. I love it. Dr. Nur Hisham is urging the public to seek immediate medical attention if they suffer from any food poisoning symptoms. He also reminded the public to choose clean eateries and practice the concept of see, smell and taste before they consume food.
Here are some additional tips from the Ministry of Health.
Tak kira di mana anda berada, sebelum makan, pastikan premisnya bersih, pekerjanya bersih, peralatannya bersih, dan makanannya selamat dan bersih. Elakkan keracunan makanan. Sebelum makan, perhati dan pilih.
There you go. Those are tips you need to keep in mind. Dr. Nur Hisham said, nothing to worry about. Incident is under control. But, you know, for me, this is a very, very important news story. It is my own personal nightmare. I can eat laksa all day, every day. And just the mere thought that there may be noodles that could kill me is frightening.
Even more so when it's potentially a famous laksa store. I find that those are the places where people tend to congregate in large crowds. And so if you have noodles that have been contaminated, oh boy, you could wipe out a lot of people. I'm sorry, but like for you, right, when you look around, I mean, I love laksa as well, and I will say, for me, cleanliness is not top of mind. I will say that
I agree.
Sometimes the scummier the place, the tastier the food.
Agree.
But maybe we shouldn't be so cocky.
No, you're right. And okay, so here's the thing, right? And I agree with Dr. Nur Hisham about see, smell, and taste.
Yes.
But there are some foods like laksa,
which are funky.
Yes. And they're a combination of so many different elements that sometimes you may not necessarily pick it up. Because the overpowering smell, okay, if you're eating like curry mee, the overpowering smell of the coconut might just hide everything else.
You know,
hide a multitude of sins like bad fish.
The tricky thing I think about laksa and about eating street food in Malaysia in general is that the location is not always the best place to judge how clean something is. I mean, you might be sitting right by a drain, but the preparation's fine. You might be in a nice place and the preparation's a bit dicey.
Well, so, this is what we want to know, right? Do you take cleanliness into account when you choose where you eat? Or, you know, are you on the team of the dirtier it is, the tastier it might be?
That number to call, 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Let us know. Let us know your food spots, too.
All right. Neil Young coming your way till the morning comes right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.